Finally! When that bass drops in, you know it's time to begin. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to DLC. Especially if you are one of our geeks in sneaks, using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run, or maybe a hike. This week we had a hiker who was like, hey man, I want a shout out. You got it. If you're hiking right now, we're going to be in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free thanks to our sponsor this week, Squarespace. Squarespace! Squarespace brings the show to you, DLC, of course, the show, all about games in their many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, that's spelled with two N's and one T, and I am joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis, the guy who's having fun in the sun, summertime, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Jeff. Hello, everyone. Witty retort.
Nice.
You didn't come really in have with much. Anything. I didn't have anything.
My setup was a little weak, too. It's summer. I'm blasted by the sun. I've been out in the pool all day. And now we're doing a fun show about video games. So I didn't have much other than it's summer and it's hot. It's triple digits at my house. What is it like at your house?
It was hot. We also did a pool day. It was pretty great. So look forward to falling asleep 45 minutes in. Let's keep this show moving. I'm just kidding.
Which would differentiate from the usual. How exactly? All right. We do have awesome stuff to talk about. We got video game news, some really exciting stuff that's been rumored for a long time that we know for sure. We got some games to talk about, that's for sure. And we have an awesome guest to do it with. You know that DLC always stands for your downloadable Cannata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, oh man, I'm excited because once again, DLC stands for Drafts, Log Lines, and Columns, because we have the writer and critic from Kotaku, who's been with us before. Heather Alexandra is back with us. Hey, Heather.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. We're so excited to have you back.
Yeah, it's always good to be here. It's always good to chat about the wonderful wide, wide world of video games.
Indeed. And I have to say, I have to give credit because I got a tweet this week from Don Eithnen. Sure, I'm mispronouncing that, but
not when you said, say it so convincingly like that. I bet you nailed it.
We said we have to have you on this week to talk about the new expansion for Final Fantasy 14. So you were so gracious to agree, and I'm excited when we get to the games that we've been playing in our playlist, and we talk about that because I know that you are putting a lot of time into Final Fantasy 14 right now, right?
Yeah, way, way too much. Well, actually, just enough, just in case Steven, my boss, hears me, Steven Totillo, just enough time into it.
Right, the perfect amount to make for great columns.
But yeah, wonderfully nice and balanced amount of time.
All right, well, let's start the show the way we always do with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by visiting our subreddit. That's 5x5dlc.reddit.com, or by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. We love getting your emails about any topic, but also submitting stories. You can do that there. Heather, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
I'm going to talk about the thing that I think is the most interesting and the one that caught me off guard the most, which is Cuphead getting an animated series for Netflix.
Yeah, it sounds like we have hit the next wave of video game inspired shows. There's a gold rush going on right now. And I don't know if I would have expected Cuphead to be part of that, but I'm kind of intrigued. As you mentioned, we heard this week that Netflix is making a Cuphead show. In fact, I think it's going to be called The Cuphead Show.
What's it about?
Cuphead.
Oh, got it.
Cuphead and Mugman, of course. It says the character-driven comedy will follow the misadventures of Cuphead and his, quote, cautious but easily swayed brother, Mugman, across their home, the Inkwell Isles. So Heather, are you excited about this?
A little bit. So the reason, so I don't know if this is the story of the week in terms of the thing that most people are the most psyched for, but I think that Cuphead has been this really interesting game, both in terms of kind of what it was as a game and what it allowed us to discuss in those normal spheres of like, hey, difficulty or whatever. And for the record, I don't think that game's actually all that horrible if you just kind of meet it on its own terms. And I really liked playing that game. That was a review process where I think I played that about a day and a half. That one like nearly killed me.
Hashtag humble brag. Go ahead. Yeah.
No, no, no. I don't mean it like that at all. That's my roundabout way of saying like, no, if you're a company with codes, maybe don't send them like the night before. No. So the thing about Cuphead that makes me interesting is that our understanding of Cuphead is so intrinsically tied to the art style. And I don't want to dive too deep into this, right? But I remember when Cuphead came out, we had this wonderful piece of criticism by a fellow named Yusuf Cole over at Unwinnable, which is this kind of more self-contained critical magazine that does stuff online. And specifically, the article was called Cuphead and the Racist Spectre of Fleischer Animation. And so that kicked off this whole conversation about what it meant to kind of go back and take these old art styles and whether or not, you know, you can have those old art styles, those really rich, wonderful art styles, because Cuphead's a gorgeous game when you really kind of look at it just on that raw artistic merit, right? Yeah. It's just so fantastic. And so what I'm really interested in looking forward, you know, as this show progresses is A, how do they capture that style? And B, what do they do with it, right? Because one of the things that Yusuf talked about in his piece, which I thought was important and is probably one of the most important pieces of writing that's been done on a game within the last, you know, 3 years or so, is that, you know, it's hard to detach art from like the context that it was made, you know? So, you know, the Fleischer brothers, you know, Max Fleischer, Dave Fleischer, and Disney, there were all these complicated things about cartoons back in the day. And so what interests me the most about seeing what will happen on Netflix is how, you know, how much they want to stick to that old art style, how much they, you know, want to make things more modern. And I say that, you know, I say that with a lot of genuine interest, because one of the things that impressed me so much recently for Netflix was Castlevania. Like, Castlevania was fantastic. And so to see, you know, if you put something like Cuphead in the hands of writers who really want to experiment with it, who shy away, you know, who don't ignore or, you know, completely, you know, wash their hands of its more complicated, like artistic lineage, but want to make something of their own and really make something funny and interesting. I think it could be something worth watching.
You bring up such a fascinating point that I didn't even consider with that, because yeah, I mean, obviously Cuphead is that 30s and 40s animation style, which anytime you dig even a little bit into that oeuvre, you're going to find problematic stuff viewed from today's standards. And it's interesting that, you know, you have this thing that is evocative of that time period, but how, I mean, as you said, how are they going to handle it? The only clue that we might get, at least from this press release, is evidently the Netflix has said the series will be, quote, safe for kids, but written so there are also things that adults find funny and appeals to a wider audience.
That's so many that, you know, that makes me laugh, though, because I remember watching, you know, and this will kind of date me a little bit now, right? Or, you know, Nickelodeon cartoons like Ren and Stimpy or Rocko's Modern Life, and how that had their own sort of you know, I could watch that as a kid, but then my mom could watch that too and have all these adult jokes hit there. So what I want and what excites me about this, you know, if it's handled well and doesn't, you know, completely just copy the 1930s stuff, you know, uncritically, is that like, maybe it could just be like a really funny thing. Maybe it could be one of those shows, like they're kind of saying in their promotions, where I can watch it and I don't know, if I'm babysitting a nephew or something, like he can watch it and he can laugh or whatever too. It's like, I like the prospect of that. And I like the idea. What I really like the idea of is I like seeing, you know, the the iconography of games and other things branching out and becoming these things that other people can enjoy, because games sometimes feel like this island unto themselves. And when we try and make things that will draw other people in, they're kind of crappy. It's like, oh, we'll do Assassin's Creed. And then like a bad Assassin's Creed movie comes out, even though like AC Odyssey is amazing. But, you know, right. Netflix pulled it off with Castlevania. They could do something interesting here. I like the idea of being able to expand these really cool icons, these really cool characters, and kind of draw people in.
Yeah, and I'm very hopeful for the Witcher series.
Right,
and,
yeah.
There's a lot of this stuff on the horizon. And the thing I've been saying over and over is, you know, there was a long time when comic books were the ones where like, oh, they're making another comic book movie. They're going to screw it up. But at a certain point, they got it right. And I think that it's bound to happen with video games as well. And I'm hoping this new wave is the one that will be like, wow, yeah, cool, a new video game TV show. Christian, I know you have some interesting take on this as well. We were talking a little bit about Cuphead. How do you feel about the show? Are you looking forward to it?
Yeah, you know, I am looking forward to it. I think the interesting thing specifically to Cuphead is that it is a game that when talked about, as Heather mentioned, even without the history, taking into account the history or the implications of the animation style. But when you mention Cuphead, anyone that knows anything about it, it is that animation, right? It's that 30s style animation. And so I'm curious if Netflix or the creators behind this show feel like they're trapped in a box a little bit in terms of what they're allowed to do in terms of their take on it. Whereas Castlevania, I really like that Netflix show. I think it's fun. And it's kind of this, if you haven't seen it, they're both seasons. I think there's only two. They're fairly short. And it's, you know, anime inspired, like a Western take on anime, which you've seen in some artwork associated with Castlevania. But aside from like maybe the DS games, like it has the graphics themselves within the game aren't as anime as other games are. I'm not saying it's like Western bruisers, you know, walking around on screen. It's clearly a Konami game from Japan and has those influences. But they did something very interesting with the art style for that cartoon on Netflix, where it's kind of their own approach to these characters. And I'm curious to see, you know, Cuphead, I guess it's cool if it looks like the game, but it's also like, well, it's a cartoon that looks like an old cartoon that's, we've had those. What was cool about the game is that it was a game that looked like an old cartoon. So it's kind of this weird, like, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't situation a little bit, where I'm curious to see their approach on it. But to me, the biggest thing is that I think we're really seeing this expansion into safe, right? Whether it's The Lion King being remade beat for beat with more realistic animation, or it's Cuphead or The Witcher or these things on Netflix, where investing in a property that has data that says that people know it, like the merch for Cuphead. You go to Target right now, I bet somewhere in the United States, maybe not every single Target, but I bet there's a good chance if you go to a Target in a major city, you can find some Cuphead merch still. And it's just one of those games that kind of exploded that way. And so I think it's cool because I like seeing games, you know, becoming broader and more mainstream and stuff like that. But I do think it's kind of an extension of scared to take risk. Instead of doing something wholly new, it's let's adapt this property for this thing because it has name recognition. Now you're probably not going to cancel your Netflix subscription. Also, look at these other, here's Adam Sandler. You know him. Are you going to watch the movie? No, but you know him. Keep your subscription. Like it feels like it's more of that to me, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but I kind of can't shake the feeling a little bit, if that makes sense.
Hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think there's a bunch of people at a bunch of companies making bets, and the surest bet is to bet on something that already has an established audience, even if that audience is relatively small. It's better than zero. But, you know, you talk about Cuphead. I think really all anyone knows about it. I mean, I guess there is a story to Cuphead. I didn't know it. I haven't really played the game, so I didn't really know the story. What you know of it is that aesthetic, is that art style. And I think that's what you get when you pay for that IP, is something that Heather was bringing up, which I think is really fascinating, doing a retro cartoon in today's environment. And I think that has the potential of being really something interesting. And maybe it's just light and fluffy and silly, and they don't even address that stuff, or I mean, not that they'd have to address it, but that it doesn't even maybe they'll attempt to just make a modern cartoon with an old art style. But I think something more interesting is possible, where they really make this sort of retro kind of thing with today's sensibilities. And I think that could be really cool and something that would make this feel special. So yeah. I'm hopeful.
I was going to say, I think about how widely divergent, you know, when I was growing up, the various different Sonic the Hedgehog cartoons were. Where one was just bonkers and off the wall and really abstract. And then, you know, Sonic Saturday, you know, AM was very serious and kind of had all these things going on, you know, longer story arcs and things like that. And I think one thing that can happen here is there's a pretty big blank canvas here where, you know, Jeff, you mentioned the story of Cuphead the game, which is, you know, all about this gambling thing, which is tied up again to some of those problematic aspects of, you know, old cartoons, you know, making certain people into degenerate gamblers or whatever else. But if you have two interesting characters and you have careful writers, I mean they did it with Sonic. You can have something that's super you can have something that's super serious and can teach kids about the environment, or you can have something that's balls to the wall wild and, you know, Bugs Bunny-esque. I think there's a lot of wiggle room and a lot of malleability. So if anything else, you know, I don't want to say, oh, I'm super excited, I love Cuphead. I don't know if I love Cuphead, but what I am certainly is incredibly curious.
Well said. Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
Well, it's a story I've been predicting. So Spicedradamus is back with the easiest prediction of all time that I've been making year upon year. So yeah, finally,
you predicted it many times. let's go slow the roll on the back slap. You know what I'm saying?
No. I'm going to enjoy this back slap. This back slap's 2 years in the making, good sir.
Oh, that's a way to frame it. I see. Okay.
The Nintendo Switch Lite, which is just it's a light switch, right? Like, that's so funny.
It's a light switch.
It's so funny. Has been officially revealed. It goes on sale September 20th for $200. Three colors, yellow, gray, turquoise. They're doing a special Pokemon themed edition in November. The big things, the big takeaways, it is smaller, the screen itself, and also the console. The Joy-Cons are no longer detachable. It is one unit. Think of like a Vita, if you're trying to picture it. HD Rumble, get out of here. There's a D-pad on the left side. Since the Joy-Cons can't come off, they don't need to have that. Well, they never needed to have it, if you ask me. But they ditched that awkward button layout thingy on the left side instead of having a D-pad. And no TV connecting possible. So
no,
I guess
dock.
It'd be...
Yeah, no HDMI port, nothing.
It has
doesn't switch.
It doesn't switch. It has a USB-C plug still in the same place, but it does not, you cannot put that and hook it up to your TV as is. You can still connect Joy-Cons to it, should you want to, for multiplayer. It does not have a kickstand, though, and it's a smaller screen. It does not feel like the type of Switch that you would put out and have people crowded around.
From the company that brought you the 3DS with no 3D.
That's called a 2DS.
The Switch that don't switch.
It don't switch. I mean, that's kind of the nuts and bolts of it. I have strong feelings, but Heather, I'm curious what your take is on the switchless Switch.
I don't know what to think about where companies want to take ostensibly their handheld sort of oeuvre anymore. And I have no clue what to think about that with Nintendo, especially because, you know, you mentioned the idea of the 2DS and now we have this. And, you know, the 3DS itself is like, that thing's basically dead. Yeah. And so in theory, this is the thing that Nintendo pushes out and wants people to play in the same way that they would want people playing the new 3DS or the 2DS. And right now, you know, without knowing a little bit more about it, even though we have plenty of specs and things like that, there's a part of me that's skeptical, if only because it's really cool to have my Switch now and to be able to sit on an airplane and be like, wow, I am stuck here and I'm going to play Dragon's Dogma, and therefore being stuck here is not as bad. But even on my normal Switch, you know, I have to make sure that I'm plugged into an outlet or something, or I don't have that much time left. But with a Switch Lite or whatever, you know, if I want to sit down and I want to play Breath of the Wild on the go or something, how much battery life do I really have? And how
evidently it's no better than the actual Switch.
Right? Well, it's a little better. It's a little better. It?
Okay. Yeah. So for me, I hadn't necessarily read up on some of those specifics, but for me, it's just the situation of, I don't know. I maybe I'm old school. I travel every day on subway and I play plenty of mobile games on my phone, but there's no part of me that was like, I really need a Switch with more inherent portability than it already has, because the Switch itself already has an absurdly high amount of inherent portability.
Well, I think that this isn't made for you or me or
no,
Christian.
It's definitely not.
I mean, right. It's not made for you or Heather. Let's be honest.
Well, you're going to buy it, but it doesn't mean it's made for you.
Okay, got it. Good.
I think it's made for the people for whom price point is very important, mm-hmm. and a robust form factor is very important. It's a cliche to say, you know, parents, but I think it's parents. It's parents who want to give their kids something that isn't, they're not going to have to replace the Joy-Con because the kid popped off and they lost it somewhere. And oh man, I got to buy a new Joy-Con because those things come off all the time. And it's less expensive and it can be, you know, tossed around and you're not going to have to worry about it so much. And I think Nintendo has shown in the past, their handhelds have had these revisions where you get something that may be less functional, but just sturdier. And it's useful because they can put it at a lower price point and open it up to people that didn't already have it. And I think it's easy for us in our prism of, you know, being people who are passionate about this hobby, looking at it and being like, well, I already have a Switch. I don't know why they would introduce this. But I think it's for people that don't already have a Switch. It's for that next billion, you know, as they say, it's the next however many millions of people that want that wouldn't buy it now because it's just a little too expensive and it just seems like a thing that could break and there's no reason to plug it into the TV because we're not going to let, you know, the kids plug it into the TV. We just want them to have something while they're in the back seat of the car or whatever. And this is that now. This is replacing the DS now.
The thing that will be for us is when they eventually are, you know, announce whatever upscale enhanced model of the Switch is the thing.
Well, that's what's so crazy is that the rumor is they're doing this and a pro version,
yep.
and they just didn't announce them at the same time. But what an insane thing of like, hey, we'll do one that has less features, but also one that has can do more.
Well, followed those rumors? Because there's been data mining and stuff. So it looks like right now it looks as if there might still be a bigger, different one, but right now it looks like some internal components are going to be switched based on like FCC filings, I think, or this, that, and the other.
Well, but that will be just the standard model we'll have, but it will be evidently just for price, just for right. cost.
So
it's nothing you would actually notice as an end user.
Correct. I wonder if that, though, led to the rumors of the Pro. I could be wrong, but
what I was reading is that there's still scuttlebutt about a actual Pro version that is like the new DS or the new 3DS was, you know, that has a little bit better processor or whatever, the Tegra 2 or whatever it would be. Anyway, I think, you know, you can't put anything past Nintendo at this point. My favorite thing that I saw this week, though, after the announcement was that famous logo that they've been using, a little animation that they do of the thing dropping down and going and the Joy-Con snapping into place for the Switch. You know, it's like that, the little snap that happens when it pops into place. Somebody redid that without the Joy-Con popping into place and it just landing with a thud. It just goes, which I thought was so clever. But
yeah, I'm really excited for it. One, because they don't listen to this show, so I can tell them. I have two younger kids and they like playing
Mario. They don't listen to the show?
I mean, I make them download it and start it just to get like the bump, okay. And you know, because that puts us over into the 2 million mark every week when they listen. But it's going to be their Christmas present, and they love Mario Kart, they love Splatoon. They don't need it on the TV. It's smaller, it will fit better in their hands. It'll be
parents. Yeah, you're proving my point.
No. Yes, I'm not disagreeing with you, but also, if I were to be buying a Switch right now, I would seriously consider only buying, like, if I didn't have one as an adult, I would seriously consider it. It's $100 cheaper, barring sales or whatever. And I would seriously need to consider, how often am I going to plug this into my TV? If you're a streamer or something like that, then yes, it makes sense. You need to be able to, you know, have video out in some form or fashion. But otherwise, I play most of my Switch in handheld mode, even if I'm at home, sitting on my couch in front of my TV.
That's why I pick up my Switch, is because if I wanted to turn the TV on, I'd probably be playing a different console.
Yeah, unless it's an exclusive. So I think the price is compelling. I think the D-pad is very compelling. A friend mentioned this to us that I had not thought of, and I think it's a great point, so I'm going to mention it here. Her concern was that, like the 2DS, Nintendo stopped putting 3D in their games in a major way, because now they released a console that didn't support it, so there wasn't as much investment in it. And her concern was that with this Switch Lite, Nintendo or other developers wouldn't put as much time in having graphics that look good in 1080p. Like, why put in that extra work for them to be able to look sharper on a big TV if, you know, whatever percentage of the user base technically can't even do that? And if that ends up being the case, that will bum me out a little bit. But otherwise, I'm very high on this device.
It'll bum you out even though you don't use it for that function?
I plug mine into the TV.
I thought you were saying...
Yeah. I mean, it would bum me out of games. It bum me out of games quit, you know, being as good as they could be, right? For a number of people. But all of that being said, the OG Switch is still, you know, being sold. So, like, if you want those things, it's like you can still go to the store and buy the one that has all those features, right? It's not as if they're discontinuing the original one. So I kind of don't understand the backlash. I see this as, more people will have Switches now. That's good, right?
I think that's for sure. Yeah, I think more people will. The biggest question I have for you, Heather, is what do you think about them colors?
Oh, I don't know. I got distracted once Christian mentioned the D-pad again, because that's great. I've forgotten all about that. Like,
yellow, gray, and turquoise are the launch colors.
Yeah, you got to have the fun ones. You got to have turquoise or something. Don't do yellow. Yellow is an ugly color. Don't do gray. Gray is boring. Grab yourself a turquoise and be bold.
Yeah. Or wait until that Pokemon edition.
Yeah.
Which will have all kinds of crazy, I'm sure.
That'll be really good.
Or wait a year for the NES edition. You know what? You like, Nintendo's good at this.
Yeah, this is the thing they are good at. Yeah, the NES edition will be rad or whatever it is. You know, it's the cool.
Yeah, palette. my new 3DS looks like some sort of Lisa Frank Trapper Keeper, and I love it. So they have all sorts of great ideas. Definitely waiting in the wings.
Well, we shall see. As you said, Christian, when you introduced the story, November 8th. Oh, no, sorry. That's when
Pokemon
edition. September 20th is when Switch Lite.
Day and date with Link's Awakening.
Not a coincidence. Although I'm surprised they're not doing a Link's Awakening version. But maybe that will be forthcoming, announced. All right. My story. Because you left me a lot of juicy ones. I'm going to have to go with the predictable one for me, which is still a rumor at this point, but it seems well reported and one that I'm excited about. Evidently, there was a report that says that Facebook has signed a VR exclusivity deal with Ubisoft to develop VR games based on the Assassin's Creed and Splinter Cell franchises for Oculus. And as a VR nut, I am very interested in this, especially as a huge Assassin's Creed fan now. I am a Johnny-come-lately to that franchise because I never liked it until Origins and Odyssey, but now it's like my favorite franchise. So I'm very hopeful for an Assassin's Creed experience that is cool. It's basically a game about VR, you know? Yeah, a bunch of people that get in a VR thing and go into a special weird place where there's somebody else. So I think that works. Splinter Cell, I'm not as excited for, just because there's a lot of stealth games in VR, and I get too nervous. I don't know. I get too nervous in stealthy games in VR. But budget cuts.
I want Splinter Cell in the vein of like a diorama.
Oh, that would be great. You're right. Looking into little Sam Fisher's world and making sure he, you know, you look around a corner to see if there's an enemy waiting for you and stuff. That would
like
be rad.
Like that and like
that's
something.
Not kind how of, they're going to do it, though. You know that.
But I want that and like, you know, John Wick Hex, you know, like a game kind of like that, but it's Sam Fisher or like the Counter-Strike Go. I'm an idiot.
Hitman.
Hitman Go, golf. Yes, that, yeah. Yeah, those, yeah,
that would be rad. There's no way that they're making that. You have a character who puts on goggles as like that's his like signature move is putting on goggles and making it all green. There's no way they're not going to have you being in the goggles pushing a button and making it all green. You know what I'm saying? That's just what they're gonna.
Maybe you play on a flat screen and then when you go need night vision, you put your VR on.
I think it'd be fun if Assassin's Creed was like that. Is like you're playing a 2D screen when you're in modern day Assassin's Creed, and then you get into the Animus and you have to put on the VR goggles. That'd be rad. Heather, are you, I don't know if you're, what your stance is on VR.
I'm fairly VR agnostic. I still have some motion sickness stuff that happens with me with VR, which is funny. The first VR game I ever played was for PSVR and it was Resident Evil 7. So I got a great introduction to VR. When I hear this news, definitely, I think I'm with you in the sense that I'm far more interested in what you could do with Assassin's Creed than what you could do with Splinter Cell. Just this idea of, oh, cool, you parkoured up a building and now you have this amazing vista that you look, you know, in on. Oh, you're actually, you know, you have to hide in a crowd from people and you feel like you are in a crowd from someone. Oh, you're playing as, you know, for some reason, off the top of my head, Connor from AC3. And oh my gosh, you're talking to George Washington and he's right there. Like, there's a lot of interesting potential there. I mean, my concern with VR is always just barrier to entry. But I mean, like, if we're looking for things that could really compel people to, you know, explore that way of enjoying a game, and at least in the context of doing it within a familiar franchise, I think there's a lot of potential there, especially for Assassin's Creed to do all sorts of interesting things.
Yes, I can't wait to find out. I'm hoping, as I said, this is still technically a rumor, but it looks like it's got some substantial reporting. Yeah. I'm hoping this is solid. And
if they don't come to Quest, I don't care, you know?
Well, man, I'm going to talk about that more in the VR segment of the show because I think that it probably will come to Quest because Facebook is really pivoting, or Oculus is really pivoting to that headset and forcing all their first-party stuff to have a version. But man, I'll talk about it more, but I played Vader Immortal on my regular Rift with my PC this week, and woof. You don't know what you're missing, Christian.
I don't want to know.
Yeah. but also I want to say another thing that I was reading up. You know, the Valve Index is out in the wild these days. I don't have mine yet because I was slow to pre-order, and I'm so sad.
You're too busy running through a dungeon instead of running to pre-order.
It's true, I was. But I have been stalking the subreddit for Valve Index, reading about people's impressions of it because I've been so excited. And I was reading, Heather, that somebody in there, and this is obviously anecdotal, one person's review, but it was a very impassioned review of somebody who said they had real nausea issues with a lot of the headsets and that the Index has none of that. He was like, it's a revelation. I don't know what they did with the lenses, but it's completely different. I can play for hours and not get any of it. So I say that just to say I feel like technologically we're kind of beating that problem, I hope.
Yeah, I mean, I've never had that much problem with PSVR unless it's those weird alternate control schemes when they're like, hey, use a controller too or whatever.
Right.
That's always a little daunting. My big thing will be once I finally move out of the small broom closet in Brooklyn that I live in, then I will finally embrace VR. And
right.
I want to, you know, I never really got to enjoy, you know, what was it? The robot one,
Astrobot Rescue Bot, Mission.
Whatever. Oh, man. You know, everybody told me about that. I think even the last time I was on the show, y'all were singing praises about it. And I've always really wanted to sit down and enjoy it. And I have friends who are just so into Beat Saber and all the ones that you mentioned when you mentioned VR these days. And it's like, yeah. I'll get there. And if this is the way to get there, then yeah, that'd be fantastic.
Cool. Well, I wish that for you because Astrobot is amazing. So one more story before we move out of the news segment. I just would love to get your feedback on the TurboGrafx 16 Mini because we got an official release date and details of what the TurboGrafx 16 Mini is going to entail because you can't have a console that was released in the 80s or 90s without having a mini version these days. And why not? Retro gaming is fun and cool, and these mini consoles are adorable. TurboGrafx 16, never the most attractive of consoles, in my opinion, but nonetheless, it will have a miniature, adorable version. And there are a bunch of games coming out for it. It will be released on March 19th for about $97, so about $100 here in the States. And there is an Amazon Prime exclusive pre-order offer, which comes out today. If you're listening to this as we release on Mondays, today, July 15th is, I guess, Amazon Prime Day. So this was the thing that was called the PC Engine in Europe and TurboGrafx 16 here. Heather, I'm not going to presume that you are old enough to remember this, but I certainly am. Do you have any nostalgia for TurboGrafx 16?
My nostalgia is reserved mostly for the Intellivision and then for the NES. I mean, I know the TurboGrafx, but my thought here, my jokey thing here is like, why don't you just give me like a Hudson Soft's greatest hits thing and I can just play Bonk's Revenge and all that stuff, because presumably that's most of what they're going to have on this collection, unless I'm wrong.
No, you're right. Bonk's Revenge, I think, is the headliner. That's the game that everybody remembers. Bonk was the TurboGrafx 16 mascot back when mascots were a thing. Also Space Harrier, which is great, but you can play Space Harrier and a whole lot of other things. Psychosis, which is a game I remember. Wise Book 1 and 2 will be on it. A bunch of other stuff. Dungeon Explorer, Lords of Thunder.
Probably one of the Bombermans.
Yes, Bomberman 93. Yes, very good. Kadash will be there. Chu Man Fu. New Adventure Island, which is a game I remember. Ninja Spirit. So there's some Alien Crush. I remember that game. But I don't think these are – I mean, these are deep cuts, you know? These are – other than Bonks, I guess, would be the biggest one. But these are pretty deep cuts. Christian, I know you are a resident retro enthusiast. What do you think of this?
It's never my console of choice. I'm very excited for people that get very excited about this, but none of these speak to me in any way, shape, or form. It was just always a blank spot for me. I had a friend that had TurboGrafx, and I never particularly loved them. And I've tried, I think Bonk 2 is the best Bonk, and I've tried, I think it was Lords of Thunder is the other that people kind of praise. R-Type's fantastic, but I don't need this for it. It's just never been my console of choice. So I've not much to say, unfortunately.
It's got that weird controller too, where it's like a NES controller with like a bunch of negative space or something, right?
Yes,
like that's the one. It just kind of is there, and you're like, okay, like sure.
Yeah. And the console itself is so ugly. It really is. And that logo is so early 90s with like the neons that clash purposefully. There's a reason it didn't do great.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I mean, the thing that I should always stress is like, I'm always in favor of this sort of stuff in the sense that I'm always in favor of anything that helps preserve old games. Like I am super ride or die for game preservation in any game, any form, however it takes, by any means necessary. That is me. Having all of these things more and more centralized to like their own individual, like novelty consoles is a little bit disappointing to me, in the sense that I would, what I would want to see is I want to see more companies take efforts to have these things available on storefronts. They're able to when rights allow. I think if they're really somehow done with stuff, I don't care. The Internet Archive is there. Do whatever you want to do with it. People like, go for it. So this idea, it's very cool to have these things, but at the end of the day, they always feel a little bit more, like novelty toy distractions. And I mean that almost in the most pejorative way, right? Where I would rather have something. And, I'm saying this knowing the possibility of accomplishing it is you can't get it done. I want something more comprehensive. I want ways that, I want a service or something. I don't know. Right. I want Sega to put Skies of Arcadia on Steam. Yes. Gosh darn it. Like, what the heck is going on? I have a Dreamcast on my shelf right now and all sorts of stuff. I don't want to buy a Dreamcast Mini in 4 years. Like,
yeah,
I would.
I mean, there will be one available.
I'll buy the heck out of it, but I'm also going to be incredibly disappointed with myself.
Right. And I think you're absolutely right with it, in the toy novelty comment, because I would guess as many of the Super Nintendo Minis as they sold for people that want to play those games, an equal number were sold of people who just wanted a tiny little SNES on their shelf. And it probably just sits there being a tiny little SNES on their shelf.
Shut your face, Jeff. You have been over to my house too many times.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, more power to you if you remember the TurboGrafx-16. I'm still patiently waiting for the 3DO Mini, and I will continue waiting.
Okay.
That's great. One of those dumb things. Yeah. All right, let us move on and talk about the games we've been playing. But first, I do need to thank our sponsor, Squarespace. I love talking about Squarespace because there comes a time in every person's existence where they need to make a website. And too many people feel like you have to pay a whole bunch of money and get somebody to make it for you or learn HTML or any number of agonizing, costly ways that are a pain. Squarespace is the solution to all of that. Squarespace is there for you to use even if you've never made a website before. Their tools are so simple, so intuitive, so easy. You can do it yourself. Turn your cool idea into a website. Showcase your work, blog, or publish content. Even selling products or services on the web, you can make a website that does all of that. All you got to do is drag and drop. It's all what you see is what you get, WYSIWYG style editing. It's simple. In fact, they don't even charge you to make your website. You don't even give them a credit card. You can get on their site, start building your website, make it how you want, and you only pay them when you launch. They're so confident with their tools that's so easy to use that you'll make something cool and so something awesome. You start with a template made by world-class designers, and then you just start messing around, making it your own. It's awesome. My own website, Jeff Cannata, was built on Squarespace. I've been using Squarespace for a decade, and I love it. I recommend it to all my family and friends. They have all the things you would need, built-in search engine optimization, analytics that can help you grow your website in real time, free and secure hosting, and there's never anything to patch or upgrade ever. It's all done in the background for you. Plus, if you run into any problems, they have award-winning 24/7 customer support to get you through any problems you might have. It's just the best. They're the best. They're the best way to make a website. Squarespace, make it yourself. So what I want you to do, if you need to make a website, head over to squarespace.com/JeffSentMe. You get your free trial and build your site. And when you're ready to launch, use that promo code JeffSentMe at checkout, JeffSentMe, all one word. Save yourself 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. And let them know that you heard about it here. Again, squarespace.com/JeffSentMe. And that promo code JeffSentMe when you check out. Squarespace, make it yourself. Make it great. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. All right, it's time to talk about the games that we have been playing. And let's start right into it, Heather, with Final Fantasy XIV. The new expansion called Shadowbringers has been out for, a couple of weeks now?
We're adding into week two or something like that. I think it's about that second week because we're about to get a new round of additional content. They usually drop it around the time of their first patch, which is like 2 weeks after launch. So that should be on Tuesday, and I'm pretty excited for it.
Yeah, everybody is buzzing about this expansion. Really, I think, has rejuvenated what is already a pretty healthy online game.
Right. And, you know, Final Fantasy XIV in the case of, listeners who might not know, is this is a game with a very troubled development history in the sense that it released initially in 2010, I believe, and it released to a pretty disastrous response, right? It was a little way too close to the structure of Final Fantasy XI, which, you know, Final Fantasy XI is a perfectly fine game, but it wasn't exactly what people were expecting from this. The original version of this was kind of slow and a little odd. And, you know, it became the situation where they needed to pull in, you know, new producer and everything. His name's Naoki Yoshida, to kind of course correct. And they, you know, created a different version of it called Final Fantasy XIV, A Realm Reborn, which released in 2013. And ever since then, they've been expanding with more and more expansions. And I think, you know, the thing that it's hard to sell people on an MMO, not just because in the case of FF14, there's like a subscription fee and an actual cost to it, but because the storytelling and, you know, the process of, you know, being in an MMO is a certain amount of a time investment. And, you know, I hope I don't seem like somebody who's, you know, very given to statements that are hyperbolic. So people can trust me when I say that Shadowbringers itself is probably some of the best Final Fantasy content that we've had in, you know, 4 or 5 years at the very least, right?
You're not just saying Final Fantasy MMO content. No, you're saying Final Fantasy content.
No, you know, it's not one of those things where it's, you know, this is good for an MMO or things like that. This is good for, you know, storytelling. This is good for a JRPG. It's, and the nice thing about this game now is that there's so many different ways and places that you can jump in and access it. You can start from the very beginning, which I'll be the first to admit is very, very slow and kind of has a clumsy on-ramp process. But once you get going, it's okay. But they also, if you are willing to spend a little bit of extra money, you can skip to numerous points in the story, whether that's just skipping the initial story that was there at launch or skipping until you get to whatever expansion that you want. I wouldn't recommend to anybody listening now who's like, oh, Final Fantasy 14, I should just play Shadowbringers. It's like, don't jump that far ahead because you won't have the context for it. But you know, playing through Shadowbringers, it's been honestly super surprising the amount of quality that Yoshida-san and his team have really brought to the franchise, whether that's in music and encounter design or anything else, it's really, really blown me away. And it's really nice. It's just nice because Square is not always great at managing their projects, and having something that, you know, somebody can come in and fix and make work out was okay. And it's nice to know that Yoshida is still there and doing stuff, because, you know, Square lost Hajime Tabata, who was responsible for turning around Final Fantasy 15. So right now it feels like Yoshida and the team at, doing FF14 are the ones who are really driving that franchise forward in a meaningful way.
I saw that I believe it was you who authored an article on Kotaku about ways for new players to get into Final Fantasy 14.
Yeah, an entire guide to tell people what they need to know to get into it. A little brief on the story so far, if they just want to do that. A couple bits of guidance on the classes to get started. It's a surprisingly user-friendly game. It's, you know, sometimes it's easy to accuse people who are like really close to a thing of like overstating the ease of getting into something. But I actually think this is a pretty easy game to get into, all things considered. And you'll make friends and you'll have a good time. And it's some of the best experiences I've ever had online. I've met some of the most important people in my life through this game.
Wow. So as somebody who hasn't really been following the development of this game for a long time, I played Final Fantasy 14 probably in around 2010 or 11 and fell away from it and have not returned. But, I'm curious about it with all the positive buzz and hearing you talk so positively about it too. Is the thing that brings you to this game the storytelling, or is there something else about this expansion? Are systems changed? Is there a new reason that it's more fun? Tell me more about that.
The storytelling has definitely been more focused. I think this was a game that spent a lot of time building up its various factions and doing a lot of world building without actually pulling the trigger on any of the, you know, various guns it had mounted on the mantle. So finally seeing things come to light is good. it's paired with enough, you know, empathy for the characters that, you know, these are people I care about, whether it's the villains or anything else. It's like, for as much as I love Final Fantasy VII, and I truly, truly love Final Fantasy VII, it's like, I never felt bad for Sephiroth, but I feel bad for, you know, even the villain of this story. But encounter design has gotten better. These are really good boss fights. The idea of knowing a role and sticking to it and really executing, whether you're a healer or you're dealing out damage and, you know, cooperating with other players is good. And there are some new systems in there that make things a little bit easier for people. This is only for Shadowbringers, and I don't know how far back it may or may not end up expanding, you know, as time goes forward. But one thing they did is they made it so there are these things that you can do which are instanced, called dungeons, which you usually have to play with at least three other real players. Now you can just play them with characters from the story. So if you're, you know, if you have performance anxiety about being in an online space and you just still really want to enjoy a good story, you don't, you know, there are still some instances where you have to interact with other players, but there's still plenty of times where you can treat it, at least Shadowbringers, predominantly like a single player story. So I know just being online and being in a constantly online space can be really scary for some people, but they're finding ways to make it easier for players to not necessarily engage with that as much if they don't want to.
So basically you're queuing up with bots. You're able to play the game that is built for a big multiplayer experience, but you're able to play it as a single player game.
Yeah. And they're given all kind of unique personalities, and they do a little bit of chatter during the instances and things like that. You know, they're all a little bit different. So I'll just give an example of something. This is something I noticed even back. So I went to a media event for this game, like in March or April or something like that. There's a boss and you're fighting them, and one of the tricks that they pull is that they make a giant gap in the arena, and there's this very small path that you have to run across. And if you fall, you don't die, but you have to restart, and you have to get to the end and do a little bit of damage to him, or else he'll wipe your entire team. One of the bots that I was playing as, one of the characters was literally walking very carefully the entire time, almost as if they were on like a tightrope, right? And you would think like, oh, they're bots, like they could do this with perfect precision. But the team went through and they thought about like, well, what would this character's behavior be in this particular instance? And that actually came through, even though, you know, this isn't, you know, the combat in FF14 isn't Sekiro, right? It's not super in-depth or anything like that. But, you know, they put that forethought into there and it really helped.
That's really cool. And you bring up the idea of having anxiety in an online space, and I certainly can understand that. But I, as somebody who's played a lot of MMOs in my time, sometimes you just don't want to deal with other humans right now. You know, sometimes you're just like, I just want to grind this, and I don't want to put up with the fact that somebody might be booted, or even if it's not me, I don't even want to just like, let me just do my thing and get in here and do my daily quest or whatever I'm going to do and get out. I think that's an amazing innovation, really an interesting option to allow people to just say, hey, I don't want to be with other human beings right now. I just want to do this and do it.
Yeah. And I know personally, you know, I've been playing a lot of the game, but my coworker, Mike Fahey over at Kotaku, is the one who's going to be doing our final review of it and everything like that. He's been doing kind of progressive updates as he's been making his way through this. But, you know, he has two kids. He has a couple of other personal circumstances that sometimes make gaming a little bit more difficult for him. And having this option means that he can sit down and do those dungeons or do those instances kind of on his own terms, which I think is really, really gratifying.
That's cool. So this is Final Fantasy 14. Shadowbringers is the new expansion. And of course, we'll refer people to your awesome article on Kotaku. But do you have just a quick suggestion if somebody is going to start up into this game, what class maybe they should try, or any quick tips?
It depends. I love healing. So you can play as a conjurer and you can heal people and keep them alive. That sounds stressful, but really it's not too bad. Here's my genuine offer. My Twitter handle is @transgamerthink. My DMs are not open, but I will check my messages. And if you have questions, I will answer them for you.
That's amazing. That's really cool. And I can attest to the fact that Heather checks her messages, because I was like, hey, do you want to come on the show? And she's like, yes. So it works, people. It works. All right. What else? Anything else on your playlist, or have you been putting all your time into Final Fantasy 14?
It's been a lot of Final Fantasy 14, slowly making my way through Bloodstained, which, you know, my brief assessment of Bloodstained is it's not brilliant, but it is exactly what it set out to be, and I'm okay with that. Like, it's not taking, even though, you know, Koji Igarashi is on that project and really you can feel his presence in that game. We've already had plenty of games of that genre, of that sort of Metroidvania genre, that have done interesting things, specifically things like Dandara, which was one where you could only move if you were jumping from ceiling to ceiling. That's a Brazilian game. That was a really impressive and unique take on Metroidvania. But sometimes when you order a slice of pizza, you just want a slice of pizza. And sometimes when you want a Metroidvania, even though that's a weird term, you just want a Metroidvania. And Bloodstained's been good for that for me.
Christian, have you put any more time into Bloodstained? Or Christian's playing on Switch. What are you playing on primarily, Heather?
PC.
Yeah,
I've put more time in. I like it. I don't. It has, you know, it will not be on my top five games of the year, unfortunately.
That sounds about right. Yeah,
but I agree with Heather. It's extremely well made, and it's one of these stories. excuse me, of like a Kickstarter game that, while it came out later, delivered on its promise, right? It was like, this, we're going to make this, and by golly they did. And yeah, like Heather said, it doesn't reinvent the wheel, but the gear, seeing your equipment on your character, the map, the layout, it's not overly complicated, which I think is good. I think sometimes Metroidvanias try to like out trick themselves, and yeah, I pizza's great. I just want pizza.
Right. Yeah, right. I get it. Sometimes you want Yoku's Island Express, and you're like, what can they do? And they made a pinball out of the other. And other times you're just like, no, give me the pizza.
Yeah.
Cool. Anything else for you, Heather?
Not off the top of my head, except maybe that I've been meaning to play more Outer Wilds, and I just haven't gotten to it. And that's a really gorgeous game. It's probably one of the most interesting and innovative games of this entire year.
Yeah, I agree. It's pretty special and very different and really interesting. We were talking about it a little last week. Yeah, it's a fascinating game. I when I play it, I want it to be just a little bit more, but it's a very indie spirit game that has grand ambitions, and I think it pushes up against the upper limit of what they're able to do, but man, what a great idea and such a cool expression of the art, you know? Like, it's like, hey, let's take this thing, this roguelike idea, but do it, instead of it being this sort of punishing test of skill or test of endurance, it's a key to unlock exploration, which is such an interesting idea.
Yeah, and you know what? I just remembered one more game that I need to just gush about for 2 seconds. Judgment, just very briefly. I don't think Ryo Gotoku Studios can do like anything wrong. I love Toshihiro Nagoshi. Those games are fantastic. If you like Yakuza, this is essentially that again. But it is charming. They have crafted, every time they make games, consistently some of the best cityscapes that you'll ever find in games. And I'm so super excited to get back to that once I am not completely glued to Final Fantasy.
Very cool. All right, Christian, you've been playing a lot of Switch stuff. Where would you like to start?
Well, I'll start with Super Mario Maker 2, just briefly to say that I designed my first and maybe only level. So if you would like to play it, the level code is T as in Tom, J, C as in cat, P, Peter, 1, R, 3, 8, G as in good. So that's my Mario Maker 2 level. I can't promise that I'll make more. I had fun making it, but I don't know how much more time I'll spend making, but I've spent a lot more time playing, but I don't need to spend time talking about it.
Can you give us a little hot take on your level? What was the inspiration of your level? What you're trying to accomplish with it? What is it?
So it's a time trial level. It's fast. It's not difficult, but there's like one misdirect in it, perhaps, that I think is fun and interesting. Mostly I just wanted to experiment with it. My nephew made a level that I thought was really fun, and I promised a friend that when he bought the game, I would make at least one level. So it is a promise kept. And I wanted to better understand. I'd played around in the mode, but not like finished a level. I wanted to better understand, you know, what goes into it. And I think I better appreciate the amazing levels of other people that I play, having gone through the process myself. So cool. That's kind of the reason. Yeah.
Awesome.
Games to talk about. Friend of the show, the director of the Warframe cinematic, which I have now watched. I watched right after the show last when we talked about it. My golly.
Good stuff,
Mr.
Right?
Trachtenberg. Will you direct my life? Because that was incredible. That was real good.
You want your life to be quite so violent, but
yeah. I don't know. They won. They came out of every scrape, so I'm okay with it. I'm okay. He had suggested and kept suggesting. Thank you, Dan. Katana Zero is kind of being right up my alley, and so I took the plunge. I downloaded it, and Dan was right. Katana Zero is right up my alley, and I will talk about it here in a second. But while I was in the eShop, as one is oft want to do, at least I am, the Messenger is on sale because the new DLC came out, and people have been telling me for years or whatever it's been to play the Messenger, and that it'd be right up my alley. All of you are right.
Isn't that on Game Pass now? Couldn't you have just had it on Game Pass for Frizzle?
I don't know. I have it on Switch. Don't tell me it's on Game Pass. It probably is.
I think it's free on Game Pass.
But I like it on my Switch, so okay. It works there anyway. I'm the person that's like, ooh, free DLC. That's 5 more hours longer. Time to buy the game. Like, I haven't played any of it, but now I'm like, now I'll play it now that it's longer. It's on sale on Switch. Maybe it's on Game Pass. Check on Switch. It's on sale through July 18th in the US, I think. So Katana Zero, I will start there. It is like a 2D Hotline Miami, where, and like the premise, if you don't know anything
Hotline
about it,
is Miami 2D?
But top down, it's not top down. So it's, yes, correct. But from the side, Hotline Miami sliced off the roof and you look in. Katana Zero slices off a wall and you look in. So yes, you are a ninja, and I won't talk about like the story, but you are assigned with going into going into rooms and killing a bunch of people, right? Doing this thing and making it out. One hit kills you. You respawn lickety split right back to the beginning of kind of the grid you're on, and you keep working through it. And the conceit is that your character has like these precognition abilities. So what you're actually doing is you show up and you're like, let me plan my route. And each time you die, it's like, oh, that wouldn't work. Try again. And so you're never doing it. You're just kind of planning it in your head. And then when you go in and do it after you complete it, it was like, yeah, did it. And then you can like watch yourself do it. So it's kind of like a neat, you know, idea for why you're running these levels over and over and over again. You have a Max Payne-esque slowdown and a roll and your katana, your blade that you're slicing with. And between those two things, the level itself, you have a certain amount of time to get through the level. So you can't spend too much time dawdling. It kind of forces you into encounters. But because if you mess up, you get to start again real quick. It kind of has this really nice replayability loop of like action and puzzle. And it has like the neon soaked aesthetic, beautiful, beautiful pixel art and a really incredible soundtrack that I know is on Apple Music. I'm not sure if it's on, other streaming services as well, but really cool, kind of fitting that aesthetic of like a neon soaked synth soundtrack that really highlights the game and as you play through it. And I'm maybe a third or so through the game, having just started it last night. I've played a decent amount. I really, really enjoy it. And so, Mr. Trachtenberg, you are correct. It's 100% up my alley. It's a very good game. Thank you for pestering me about it.
It's a very good game. I like it a lot too.
Yeah, it's very good. The Messenger is like the NES Ninja Gaiden. Picture that and you have a really good idea of what the Messenger is. I'm maybe 2.5 hours into that. And I love it with my whole heart. It's fantastic. You have a little upgrade tree where very early on you get the ability to climb up walls, throw, I don't know if they're shurikens or what they are, but throwing stars. And it feels like what Shovel Knight did to kind of Mega Man-y-esque that era games where it's like, it looks like the games that were out back then, but Shovel Knight couldn't have run on a NES. That's what the Messenger is like, and I'm not far. I've heard there's other things that happen later in the game that push it even further, but it's like, oh, I'm playing Ninja Gaiden. It looks like that. Well, it can't. It's not really. Like, it couldn't really have run this game. But the levels are really intricate and really cool. The platforming is really great in terms of, you know, navigating through, and then the moves you have, where one is like, picture like the candelabra in Castlevania where you whip and you get items from it. They have things like that in the Messenger. And when you hit them, you'll get items, but also you can then air jump off of that. So where I am, it's not, maybe you can unlock full air jump later, but here I can't air jump off of anything, but I can hit items to get a, you know, an extra boost to jump up somewhere. And I have an unlock where I can hit enemy projectiles and jump off of those as well. So it kind of creates some really fun action platforming throughout the levels. And to speak to the slice of pizza, this is just me personally, but both Katana Zero and the Messenger instantly spoke to me, whereas Bloodstained was like, I like this. Like, I'm going to finish Katana Zero and the Messenger before I go back to Bloodstained. That's, you know, how immediate they're put into my veins.
That's good. High praise.
Last thing. Dr. Mario World on iOS. I don't like it. The first 20 levels are tutorial, and you can kind of play through them all you want. After that, you unlock multiplayer, which I think is pretty chill, but I'm awful at it, so it's not chill for me. And then after that, after those first 20 levels, you get locked in. I'm sure there are worse, but it feels like pretty heavy-handed what you picture mobile monetization to be, in my opinion. And then the thing that kind of grates my cheese the wrong way is, I could have the numbers wrong, but I don't think so. I wrote this down. So it's 30 gems to get an unlimited 60 minutes of play. Otherwise, you have like stamina. So 30 gems to get an unlimited 60-minute session. But gems, you can only buy in amounts of 20, 50, 100, 200 or something like that. So you can't buy the amount of gems that you, I hate that. It's like what Xbox Live used to do, where it's like a game was 480 points, but you could buy 500 points.
Right.
So it was like that with the other, like, you're out of stamina, you didn't, or you failed a level. You want to pay, I don't know what it works out to be, like, you got this in-game currency, you can try it again, or you can spend $1 to get the currency to do the thing. Like, it felt like the game was aggressively telling me not to play it. And I know some people really get into, you know, games that do monetize pretty aggressively. But for me personally, when a game, well, I shouldn't say a game, the way Dr. Mario World tried to monetize me, instead of motivating me to spend, it motivated me to try a different free game. Because it's such a big ocean. So I bounced off it pretty hard, but I'm curious if either of you have given it a shot or not.
I played some in a preview event, and even just in the preview, my sentiment was basically the same, where I was like, I can see marks of something interesting here, where they're taking Dr. Mario. And one of the big things about this is that you actually only have a limited amount of pills to solve any puzzle, as opposed to normal Dr. Mario, where you can kind of just go, 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 go.
Yeah.
And I think it'd be cool to craft certain stages that really challenge you to think really creatively and to learn those puzzles. But it really does feel, you know, and I'm fairly lenient when it comes to mobile stuff, even though, like, loot boxes are terrible. Gacha is like completely designed to mess with us, but also, like, hell yes, pardon my language, I play Dragalia Lost. but this, no, I think I'm with you here when it kind of feels like a little bit of a bridge too far.
It's weird, because I almost feel like I hold Nintendo to an unfair standard, because I think if this were some other game, I'd be like, oh, cool. But instead, I'm just like, not like this, Dr. Mario. Like, it's almost like we were talking about with Cuphead and Netflix, where it's like, there's expectations. There's a thing. Like, this is a brand that I've been playing for 20 years. and it feels like they went and did it wrong. But like you
since
said, Heather,
Mario got his PhD, man, it all went downhill.
There is interesting stuff. The pills now float up. They once you send them in, they start floating, and you can kind of keep manipulating them as they float. So there are some really interesting mechanic changes, I think, that could be a really cool evolution to the game. But I really enjoyed the first 20 levels or whatever it was. They went by quick. And then after that, it really aggressively pushed me away, unfortunately.
Well, that's Dr. Mario World on mobile. And a thumbs down from everybody here. I have not even given it a shot. I do not need that in my life. So didn't even download it. What I've been playing is almost exclusively VR, so we'll get to that in a second. But we did get a listener-submitted review. If you feel like there's something that we overlooked, or we didn't talk about enough, or a game we just not even on our radar at all, I encourage you, send us your reviews. You can send them to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. This one comes from Brad, who says, just wanted to write in to let you know that I've been playing Hades, the early access roguelite from Supergiant, the creators of Pyre, Bastion, and Transistor. This game has blown me away. You play the game as Zagreus, son of Hades, and you're trying to escape from the underworld, something that has never been done before. During your escape attempts, the gods of Olympus are trying to help you by giving you upgrades to your various attacks and abilities. When you die, you end up back at home in the palace of Hades, and he is, of course, taunting you every time. This story conceit fits the run-based nature of the game perfectly, better than any roguelike I've ever played. The combat is fast-paced action in an isometric top-down style similar to Bastion. The controls are super tight, and it's a ton of fun to play. There's so much variation in the combat from run to run due to the various upgrades from the gods of Olympus that it never gets stale. The roguelite progression between runs is also very well done, so you never feel bad for failing on a run. There's always an upgrade to help you do better next time. Last but not least, the art style and writing are top-notch and exactly what you would expect from Supergiant. You can currently play the game on the Epic Game Store while it's in early access, but I believe there are plans for it coming to console for a full release. Cool, Brad. I have not tried Hades yet. I'm waiting for that full release, but my goodness, I'm a fan of Supergiant and eagerly anticipate. Even their misses, from my perspective, are still fascinating. I thought Pyre was so interesting, but it didn't click with me. But Bastion is on my somewhere on my favorite games of all time list somewhere, because it's an amazing game. So I'm really looking forward to Hades. I just haven't tried the early access yet. So good to hear that it is fun. You're enjoying it.
It's really good. It's actually one of my favorite games of the year so far.
Really? Well, maybe I got to get into the early access then. Ah, I'm excited. That's cool.
Messenger is on Game Pass, at least on PC. I was doing some Googling because I had
I thought so.
Read this in advance. So if you don't need it on your Switch for portability, play it. Check it out. You already have it. It's, you know, air quote free.
Could have had it for free, bro. Could have had it for basically free to yourself. All right. Let us talk a little VR. Let me talk a little VR. Virtual reality. All right. I've been playing a lot of VR this week, and I know I'm the only one really, but I still want to tell you guys about the games I've been playing. There is a new Oculus exclusive Oculus Studios game that came out that I've been eagerly anticipating. It's called Defector, and I played it this week. This is from Twisted Pixel, the studio that made a game that I think, I don't know what many people talk about it, but man, back when it came out, I loved it and couldn't stop playing it, called Splosion Man. Do you guys remember Splosion Man?
Yeah, that was great.
So fun. And then I think Ms. Splosion Man came out, was a sequel. Really cool studio that has done some interesting things. Nothing, well, that's not true. They also made Wilson's Heart, which was their, I think, their first venture into VR, which was an interesting storytelling game. Defector is basically a James Bond game. It is has you taking the role of a James Bond-esque super spy with all of the things that come with it. It's cool gadgets, crazy action set pieces, fun gunplay. This is a first-person game that I played on my Rift with the touch controllers. And it basically – it's not a long game. It's I think, 5 or 6 different missions, and all of them are fairly short. So I think I've got through it in about 4 hours, maybe a little more. So it's not a super long game. It's also $20, so it's not a full priced game. And that is really, I think, just a lovely place for games to be right now, where I can enjoy it in just a couple or three sittings and feel like I got my money's worth. Anyway, I really dug this game. It's hard not to compare it to Blood and Truth because they're doing very similar things. These are both storytelling games where you start out and you sit in a room and somebody's like, tell us what happened on the mission. And you're like, well, diddle-loo, 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 and then you go back and play through the mission. So the structure of them is very similar. If Blood and Truth is, you know, is the Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels or whatever, this is, you know, this is Skyfall, the James Bond. And so it's a little more, you know, upscale as far as what you're doing. You're in, you know, you're in tuxedos and you're leaping out of airplanes and you're wearing fancy contact lenses that give you data on people and you find cool gadgets and stuff like that. And the, I think visually it's very, very impressive. It looks great on the Rift in high settings, and it delivers these really cool set pieces. And I think the special thing that it does, or at least the thing it thinks is special, is that it gives you in each mission, it gives you a very clear branch point where you can make a big decision on how that mission is going to play out, which is cool. And it basically means playing the game over again is worthwhile because you have these big branching points that you're literally doing a completely different action set piece based on the decision that you make.
That's cool.
It's cool. It's also nice that they allow you in the menu once you've done a level to play, like it's like a, there's like a quick action mode or quick play mode or something like that. And they let you just jump to those decision points without having to play through all the preamble. So you can just do the other decision if you want to, which is nice, and see all that work. But, and that's cool, but I also feel like, yeah, you did twice the work for what doesn't feel like twice the amount of fun, because in the context, I only see this much. But you do some really awesome stuff in this game, and it's all that giant over the top, you know, craziness. It doesn't hold up in comparison to Blood and Truth, because I think Blood and Truth tells a story that's much better and more interesting and has characters that I'm interested in and has more connective tissue, really. This is just sort of disparate missions that I guess add up to something, but it doesn't really feel that way because you're not making all of the missions have different people in them in different places, and it doesn't really feel like one continuous story.
Is it on Quest?
No, it is not.
Boo! All hail the Queen of Slime!
It may be coming. I would imagine that Oculus is working hard to get. So there are these games that are in the pipeline, right? That happened before
Prequest,
and they still haven't come out, right? So the big three are Defector, Azar's Wrath, and Stormland. Which are all coming in the next few months, and none of them are going to support Quest. They're all big, giant Oculus Studios investments that are these, you know, tentpole games, and they were all designed with, you know, pushing the limits of what Rift can do before Quest was released. So, no. Short answer, no. Long answer, I can't imagine they're not going to try to come up with some version that'll be on Quest.
Defector Unchained or something.
Maybe. Either way, I really have enjoyed it on Rift because it does look really good, and you're doing crazy, insane things. You know, the first, I won't spoil any of the later missions, but the first mission, you literally leap out of a plane into another plane. And
oh, that's cool.
It feels amazing in VR. It's really crazy. And then you like stand on the, open door of an airplane holding a machine gun, shooting other planes out of the sky. I mean, it's like it goes to 11 every time. But it does feel like a short kind of highlight reel of experiences, but it's again, $20. So it's that $20 experience. I would highly recommend it. If you have a Rift, again, it's exclusive to Rift. So I don't know if five users will figure out a way to, you know, revive it. But right now I really like Defector, and I would highly recommend it. It also is a game that makes me wish that Blood and Truth was available on other headsets than PlayStation VR. Cause you go, oh yeah,
that this game is how so it's all good. Supposed to feel.
It is very good. It it's is very, so good. Very good. But man, if I had the touch controllers in that game and
oh yeah,
and
PSVR inputs are poo.
They're garbage. They're retrofit to old tech, and it's unfortunate. All right. So some more VR that I have played. Vader Immortal, which was a Quest launch title, is now on Rift. And so I downloaded it on Rift and played
free?
It just
a cross buy. Was it a cross buyer?
I think don't
it
believe
is.
It.
Is it? No,
I was, I mean, it was free to me, but I had a, you know,
got it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Copy.
Okay.
So, I'm not sure if it's cross buy. It maybe either way. I did buy it on Quest and then I got a review copy on Rift. So, it's amazing how different it looks, dude. It looks good on Quest, as you can attest, right?
Yeah, I enjoy. I mean, it's the game. It's the go-to. Like Beat Saber is the game to have fun, but
yeah.
Vader Immortal is a game I put on people to give them that sense of presence, where it's right. Like you're in a place. Look how awesome this is.
But you remember in the beginning when you're on the ship and you look around and you look down at your controls and there's sort of the textures are sort of flat.
Yeah, it was between episodes. We had junky ships. We weren't in a Naboo cruiser.
Well, on Rift, the textures ain't flat, bro. They look really good, and the lighting looks way better. And yeah, I was shocked at how much better it looks on Rift. I was like, wow, this is how this game is supposed to look. Oh, man. It's a bummer. I mean, I think Quest is such an awesome product, and I think untethered and self-contained like that is so useful and such a great way into VR. But man, the games can look so good. So good.
Did you find, and I don't mean this to be like Quest versus Rift because whatever, but I am curious, did you find yourself going back into your old style of play of feet plant?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I mean, I've been doing that for so long that it was an easy pair of shoes to put on. But yeah, I mean, that's how I play Rift games, is because I'm tethered to the computer and I don't want to twist around and yank things out and knock stuff over in my office and et cetera, et cetera.
But if you don't have a Quest, Vader Immortal, I mean, if you just have a Rift, it's an even easier recommend than it was last time we talked about it. It seems
It's $10. It's just a short episode of what is supposedly going to be multiple episodes of content. But man, great storytelling. Within the first 10 minutes, you come face to face with Darth Vader, and that a moment alone is worth $10 to be feel like Darth Vader just walked up to you and looked you in the eye, and he's the same size as you. And I mean, it's incredible. So yes. And then there's all kinds of other cool stuff with laser, lightsaber stuff. It's great. But yes, I just was struck as to having only seen it on Quest, how much better it looked on Rift. And I can only imagine with these other headsets coming out. Okay, one more game and then I'll stop talking about VR. This is a game that evidently has been around for a while. I'd never heard of it. It's called Fuggle or Fugle. I'm not really sure how it's pronounced. F-U-G-L. Heather, have you heard of this game before?
No, I was afraid you're going to ask me that because I was going to be like that. I have no clue. I have no idea about this one.
Evidently, it's been out on Steam for a long, long time as just a 2D game. I only found it because it was on the Rift storefront or the Oculus storefront. I hope this game comes to Quest. I don't think it's available on Quest yet, but I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be because it's not exactly, you know, pushing polygons. Well, it kind of is. It's a voxel game. So if you know about voxel as a technology, it's a bunch of little squares that have their own physics, really, and are able to, you cobble them together and you create really detailed things because the squares are really tiny. So there's a bunch of voxel games out there that you can find, but all of them have a very distinct look. They look like they're made out of, I don't know, little bits of things. And then invariably, those bits of things blow apart in these games because they're made of voxels. And there's that the twin stick shooter that I played from, what was it called? Doesn't matter. Anyway, this is a voxel game, so it has that unique style. But in VR, it's wild. And even calling this a game is, maybe overstating it, because it's more of an experience. It's very zen-like. This is sort of more of like a flower or journey, where you play as this bird and you're flying through these environments. You start in this very tropical environment that is utterly stunning. Voxel created, but with beautiful water below you. And then these islands that have trees sprouting off of them and in rock formations and flowers and all kinds of stuff, all made out of these little squares, these colorful little squares. So the draw distance in this game is insane. And the farther away stuff is, the better it looks, because the voxels far away look more like, pixel art. And up close, you really see the distinction of the little individual pieces. But you play as a bird, and there are other birds on the island. And if you fly up next to another bird, you morph into that bird. And then, so you start as a seagull, and then you fly up to this like rainbow colored bird, and then you morph into that bird. And then you can morph into a butterfly at one point, and then you're flapping a lot faster. You don't have to flap. You're soaring around this world, and you can accelerate and change your direction, but that's really all you're doing is experiencing it. And then you fly up next to a monkey, and you can turn into a monkey, and there's all kinds of other animals. And then there's all these different biomes, different environments that you can eventually uncover and find. And it's all about going through these levels and finding things and changing into other animals or creatures and experiencing these other beautiful places. And you can go under the water and turn into fish. And it's extraordinary in VR because it's serene and gorgeous and gives you this sense of soaring. I really, really enjoyed this game. I mean, again, game is maybe the wrong term, but this experience, Fugle, F-U-G-L or Fugle. And again, it's available as a 2D game. I don't know if I would feel as strongly about it in 2D, because, being inside that experience is so effective, but, maybe anybody might want to check it out even in 2D. Fugle. All right. That's my VR experience this week, and we will check in on all that stuff. There's a lot of big VR games coming out, as I mentioned, over the next few months. But that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Heather Alexandra, thank you so much for being here. It's been such a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Every time I'm here is just fantastic.
Yeah, I agree. I love having you as a guest. You're always so insightful. Tell people where they can read your work and keep up with you online.
You can find pretty much everything I do at Kotaku.com. We are a video game website about video games. If you're looking for me on social media, you can find me on Twitter at @transgamerthink. And that's it.
Very, very cool. Christian Spicer, how about you? What do you got going on this week?
It was my wife's birthday and it's my anniversary. Aww. So it's going to be that. I planned them close together, so
you
I can never
You got married
forget.
On your wife's birthday? Wow.
No, they're just That's really close. So I
classic
forget.
Cheapskate move, baby.
If I forget one, I remember the other. Hey, I'm actually really good about remembering that stuff. Play my Mario Maker level. Give me feedback. That's not what I'm doing this week. That's what I want you to do. Should I make more? Play my level. Tell me if you liked it. Otherwise,
try my product.
I got that B-roll. at Spicer is my Twitter, and I stream this show Sundays, usually at 7:15 p.m. Pacific, twitch.tv/Christian Spicer.
Speaking of try my product, if you have not yet checked out The Dungeon Run, my live play D&D game, please do. Please try my product. I am so proud of this thing. I think it's the best work I've ever done in my career. And I am not one to be, it may sound immodest, and I am not one to boast, but I really do think it's the best work I've ever done. And it is very special. I know the episodes are quite long, but I promise you, there are wonderful payoffs. The players are extraordinary. And the storytelling that we're doing is amazing. I mean, last episode, there were tears in the room at the end. It is it's a beautiful thing, and I'm really super proud of it. So I hope you check it out. The Dungeon Run, you can find it on YouTube or as an audio podcast, wherever you get audio podcasts. But the really coolest way to watch it is on Wednesday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific when we stream it live, because we actually allow viewers – excuse me. We allow viewers to influence the story. So I hope you check it out, The Dungeon Run. You can also listen to me talking about movies and TV shows over at the Slash Filmcast, which you can find at slashfilmcast.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. And if you want to write into this show for any reason, it's dlcfeedback@gmail.com. We appreciate getting any of your messages, comments, questions, suggestions, what have you, at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts. Hey, give us a suggestion. Heather, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
I do. I worry that it might be similar to what I think Christian might be suggesting, but I'm going to do it anyway, which is to say, go and cook something. And if you have trouble cooking something, I'm going to suggest a really good cook that can give you some hints. They have their own YouTube channel and book and everything else. It's a fellow by the name of J. Kenji Lopez Alt. If you look him up on YouTube, he has a YouTube channel that he doesn't use very often, but he has a lot of things on there that'll help you out. It'll teach you how to mince a shallot, teach you how to break down a chicken, teach you how to do three ingredient stovetop macaroni and cheese. So cooking doesn't have to be complicated. If you have three ingredients and you have a pot, you can make some of the best gosh darn mac and cheese of your life. And also, if you look up some of his stuff, he's one of those folks who put out a really good recipe for an alternative of going to like Chick-fil-A. If you're somebody who doesn't really want to, you know, support Chick-fil-A or anything else anymore, you can still have good things in your life. You can still learn a valuable skill, enjoy decent food. I fell off cooking for a little while, and I've been meaning to get back into it, especially for some health reasons, but also just relaxation. It's just, yeah. It's good to make something. It's good. You'll have 20 to 30 minutes where all you need to worry about is just making something of your own. And there's something incredibly gratifying in that. So if you're looking for somebody who has good instructional videos and good recipes, J. Kenji Lopez Alt, fantastic chef, really worth looking into.
J. Kenji Lopez Alt, is that what you said?
Yes. So okay. J. Kenji, K-E-N-J-I Lopez Alt, like it sounds.
I am going to be looking up specifically the Chick-fil-A recipe because that sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's great. And I totally second that. I came to it very late in my life, the appreciation of cooking. But man, I really do enjoy it now. It is a lovely endeavor. It is a lovely thing to make some food and then have people enjoy that food. It's an amazing thing. All right, Christian Spicer, what do you got?
I mean, after that beautiful conversation, mine is way less inspired. Thanks a lot, Heather.
I think yours is going to be great too.
I think it was a couple of weeks ago when like it started first getting hot in LA and now it's hot again. I just recommended watermelon, which is like the silliest parting gift, but one I stand by wholeheartedly. This is of that same vein. Pico de gallo. I love, or salsa fresca, whatever you want to call it. I love pico. It's just tomato, onion, cilantro, lime juice. That's all you need. Chop, 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 chop. Blop, let it sit for a little bit.
You'll chop some, and blop.
Yeah, chop and blop. Some chips, maybe some lime seasoned tortilla chips. Yum, 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 yum. I love pico. I love it so, so much. And it's so incredibly easy to make. Confession, when I was in college, I think, I was at a friend's house. And we were like watching, I don't know, some sporting event. We were like, we should get guacamole. And we were like, yeah. And we went to the store and we were like, what's in it? And we made like various phone calls. Be like, okay, what do we need to make guacamole?
Various phone calls.
And it was just like
guac hotline. Let's call it.
It was like an avocado. What else? I mean, nothing really. What do you need? Anyway, guacamole, easy to make. Pico de gallo, very easy to make and very delicious.
Try
a yellow onion.
What I got to ask you, like, what pico de gallo or guac? What's the summer
pico?
Really?
Yeah.
Guac all day, every day, as far as I'm concerned. Heather, you want to be the tiebreaker?
I was going to say pico de gallo.
Really? Over guac?
I mean, I don't know. I had a roommate in college who used to put, like, he would cook for us and he would put, like, guac and avocados in everything. So, you know what? I'm sick of it. And so, yeah, a little bit of pico de gallo.
There's not enough avocados in any. I love avocados. You know, I'm changing my parting gift. I'm changing my parting gift. I may have already said this one some other time, but let's do a listener one first. This one comes from Eric Reidelbach. Eric writes, longtime listener, first time emailer. Wanted to send a quick parting gift this week that I thought you, Christian, and your audience might enjoy. Several months ago, both of you opened my eyes to the wonder of the midnight. Yes. Since then, I've become a huge fan of their music, and it's rekindled my love for all things 80s. This week, I discovered a similar band that I enjoy just as much, dare I say more, called Le Brock. Maybe it's the newest season of Stranger Things, but this band has me ready to get my synth rock on. Their song Dangerous Dreams is the song I currently have stuck on repeat, and I think it's worth checking out. Thanks for all that you two do for our community on a weekly basis. I wish you both the best. Thanks, Eric. That is high praise indeed. The Midnight, by the way, is now my 2.5-year-old son's favorite band, which he calls the Midnight. And he constantly – he knows all their songs. He knows the lyrics to their songs. And he constantly forces us to play the Midnight, Vampires and Sunset and all the Midnights. This high praise, if it's as good as or better than the Midnight, I'm all into it. It's Le Brock and their song Dangerous Dreams. If you want to have your parting gift read on the show, send it to us, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. We appreciate getting those. So I'm gonna jump on this food bandwagon thing. I'm going to change my parting gift on the fly. I don't think I've ever said this on the show before. Maybe I have. Do you know what my favorite ice cream flavor is, folks? Guacamole. It is actually avocado ice cream. It is the best ice cream in the world. Just to prove how much I love avocado, and I'll put it on anything. Avocado ice cream is the best ice cream flavor I have ever had. And I, friends, am an ice cream nut. So believe me when I say it. Well, there's a place called Granados in the East Bay. It's actually a chain that has avocado ice cream, but there's also lots of avocado ice cream recipes online. So if you have an ice cream maker, you can make it yourself.
I was going to say, I don't know if I can get away like walking into Brooklyn, going into a place and be like, can I have some avocado ice cream?
Not if you say it like that, Heather. You got to – confidence. Plant those feet. Oh, yeah, avocado ice cream, you know?
I'm telling you, it kind of didn't sound good to me the first time I tried it. It is – I get – whenever I go up and visit my family in the East Bay, I get pints of it because I can't get it anywhere else. And you have to make it yourself. But if you have an ice cream maker, search online for avocado ice cream. This may sound gross to you, but there's actually chunks of avocado in it. And it's amazing. It's amazing. It is by far my favorite ice cream. And it might be my favorite dessert, period. Is just avocado ice cream. It is that delicious.
Do you dip like cinnamon tortilla chips in it?
No, you just eat it like ice cream. It's incredible. So I highly recommend, if anybody listening has not tried avocado ice cream, if you find yourself in a place that has it, give it a shot. If you find yourself with an ice cream maker, give it a Google and maybe give it a shot.
Heather's going to get kicked out of Brooklyn now. I hope you're happy, Jeff.
Well,
this is your
fault.
You know
what? It'll be worth it. It'll be deliciously worth it. I'm just saying. All right. That's it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Heather Alexandra and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to all the folks in our chat room for hanging out with us in real time. We appreciate you doing that, making the show better. Thank you to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for the cool bumpers. And thank you to each and every one of you who download the show and listen. We appreciate you. We'll be back next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.